I am Paige Albaniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. After an unplanned pandemic-related hiatus, we are excited to be back with some new conversations around the now even more rapidly changing world of television and entertainment marketing. We return with the following conversation with Customer Experience Agency Definition 6 about performance or acquisition or behavioral marketing, whatever you want to call it, and how this precise and data-driven form of marketing encompasses critical tools and knowledge that everyone in entertainment marketing needs to be deeply involved with as this industry moves forward. I will introduce you to the team at Definition 6, and we'll get into the conversation. Hello, I am Paige Albaniak, editorial director at Promax, and today I have the great pleasure to be talking to the folks at Definition 6. We are going to be talking about performance and behavioral marketing, and with me I have Jason Rockman, president, Doug Diamond, senior vice president and group creative director, and India Christie, senior analytics manager, all at Definition 6. Hello, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
All right, so to kick it off, Jason, you call yourself a customer experience agency, so tell me what that means.
Sure. So first, you know, within the Promax world, the agency is predominantly known for the work that we do across trailers, promos, production, post-production, key art, that sort of thing, and we absolutely love that business and have been in that business for a very long time, but the reality is when we take a step back and look at and think about everything that we do, to your point, yeah, we do think of ourselves as a customer experience agency. And in that line of thinking, we're leveraging everything that we do across creative and content and bundling that with our capabilities across technology and our capabilities across analytics to really create holistic customer experiences that take into consideration or manage every possible touch point from a creative perspective, an analytics perspective, and a technology perspective.
Do you call all of that behavioral marketing? And if so, is that the same or is that something different than performance or acquisition-based marketing, which is a term that comes up a lot in the last couple of years?
Yeah, so I'll kick this off, and in India, if you have anything to add, please feel free to do so. But there's, for lack of better phrasing, there's a lot of jargon that we try to work through. So we're trying to keep it as simple as possible. But when we talk about behavior-based marketing versus performance-based marketing, acquisition, lead flow, funnel management, all of that is, unless you're dealing with it on a daily basis, it's just a bunch of stuff, right? But what we do is we try and think about it as behavior-based marketing in that we're actually looking at how people are behaving across each one of the touch points that a brand has. Everything from where they start engaging with a brand, be it in social or a video that they're watching on YouTube or their own properties on their website or a streaming platform, all the way through to, you know, what does that subscription cycle look like? When are they renewing? How are we gauging or segmenting different customer sets to really understand who of the customers or subscribers or viewers are most engaged versus those that are least engaged and everything in between, and how we want to message to those different groups across different touch points to ideally keep them engaged, keep them coming back for more, turn them into loyalists, convert them into advocates of the brand to the point where they're acting on behalf of the brand. India, did I miss anything?
No, that's exactly right. It's really just that customer first approach, really observing their behavior and then using those insights to kind of develop the tactics and strategies around it for them.
I was talking to an entertainment marketer for a network and they were promoting a show, and I asked him like a marketing funnel question, and he referred me back to Nielsen data, and I thought it was interesting because I was like, it's not really what I'm asking you, but I kind of let it go. But do you find any of these brands that potentially do not need this kind of marketing? Every, you know, if you're NBC, you're ABC, you're Nat Geo, you're FX, no matter who you are, even if you have a linear brand identity, you're still
very active in the digital space, so you have a way to access and integrate this information, correct?
You know, a lot of people don't think of the funnel and the digital footprint and that there are so many touch points that Jason referenced before. And really one of the challenges that you're trying to overcome is looking at all the different parts of the funnel, how your customer's engaging, what you're trying to go after in an awareness situation is very different versus getting them to subscribe. And so it's really getting very specific on what you're trying to employ at each different level of the funnel. And, you know, I don't find that there are brands or clients that shouldn't care about this. It's definitely important. You want to have that 360 customer view. Making sure you have a full understanding is super, super important. And then once you have that, you are able to really dial in and drive getting down to those business goals that you're looking for.
Anything to add to that, Jason?
The only thing that I would add is it becomes, when you're talking about the view between what's happening in linear versus what's happening across the own digital landscape, it's a game of correlation. Right? You're looking at all of the own touch points and comparing what's happening on a consistent basis from a performance, from a measured performance perspective, as it relates to engagement or where people and how people are engaging with you and your content on your own platforms versus what's happening in the linear space from a viewership perspective. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a point where you really truly start to understand if we put more emphasis into, I'll use social as the example, more emphasis into social and really think about who the people are that we are, that are following us, that are engaged with us across social, what types of content are highest performing as it relates back to linear viewership. Okay, great. Let's really dig in on what those learnings are so that we can make more and faster decisions around what we should be doing in this channel or other own channels to drive that viewership, as well as move people to where we want them to be on our own owned channels.
Right. So let's just to create a picture of this for people. Let's say we are launching the Definition 6 television show and we're launching season one. And then, so you're launching the show, but then you also want people to subscribe to the Definition 6 SVOD channel or service. So what are the things that you do in terms of launching a show and measuring that versus trying to get people to subscribe to the service and measuring that? And how do those two efforts interact?
Yeah. So I think what we would do is when we're putting together the show, really thinking through who's the show for in terms of audience, then where are the acquisition channels that we want to use or are best suited to target and acquire, meaning pull them into our subscription base. You know, the acquisition journey is in and of itself a hugely important, obviously, area of focus that you really have to think about what's the right wording, what are the right visuals that you have up on a screen? Are they more likely to subscribe to our show on a phone versus a desktop or a tablet? And really thinking about what that overall experience is like, all the way from just simple A/B testing. Do they like this experience versus this experience, or something more complex like multivariate testing, where you're literally looking at the number of lines of copy, a multitude of different visuals that you have in front of them, spacing between different modules of content on each page. And I'm sure Doug and India could talk ad nauseum about multivariate testing, but that's where it starts. And then it becomes a matter of how do you keep them engaged and what channels are they most likely to leverage to learn more about your programming.
So it's almost like the show is almost like a piece of marketing for the service. I mean, it's right. So it's like you're marketing that lead piece with the idea of you're trying to generate them back to become a subscriber. But so Doug, let's talk about that creatively. So then what does that mean in terms of, because I've always resisted this idea of data to drive the creative. I'm not like, I'm such a wildly creative person, but as a writer, I resist it. But what does it mean for you as you're sort of coming up with the creative to go along with what those analytics are driving?
Well, there's a couple of things here. You have to think about data is really a consideration, right? It's like anything, right?
It's not the rule.
It's not the rule necessarily, but we already, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years, right? So you always sort of figured out who your audience was. What is the thing about this show that will speak to the audience you're trying to get? Like that was, that's all really behavioral data just based without any real data, right? So now we have all that, right? And so it's really a consideration, but everybody wants their, you want your campaigns to resonate and to actually drive viewership. And whether that's driving viewership to the show or driving signups to your SVOD, this just gives you a better idea of what will likely resonate and what will likely be successful. And I think what's even more important is it gives you a better idea of how to modify the campaign overall, depending on where you're speaking to that audience, right? So if you're trying to go after somebody through Instagram marketing, right, you're going to speak, it doesn't change the essence of your campaign, right? So that core creative that you've come up with that you love and is amazing, it doesn't change that, but it changes a little bit the way in which you present that core creative. And so the idea of knowing what's, and social is a really good aspect of this, right? Knowing what's resonating with people, you can start to modify and change your path a little bit on that creative. And that's something that, you know, we never used to do. We would come up with a promo campaign for a show, and that was a promo campaign for the show. And I think now you can't think about it that way, right? It should, in some ways, it's more exciting as a creative because it's a living, growing, breathing thing that as you learn more about what's happening, where is this messaging going, what's hitting, what's not hitting, and even within the content of the show, what are people gravitating to? Oh, then let's talk more about that, right? Let's talk about, we thought it would be the romance aspect, but it's really the scary aspect or whatever that is. It's this character versus that character. And all of that is, we used to get sort of that blanket information based on like Nielsen's, like how many people are watching, how are they tuning in, when are they tuning out, right? Like that was always the thing, like, oh, they stopped watching after act two, we need to do something, right? Now you get way more precise information around what each segment of viewers are, and you can speak to each one of them in a way that's going to react, that's going to get them to react. And I think to your point, you sort of mentioned that the show sort of becomes a marketing tool to get them to the streaming service. That's definitely true, right? Because obviously it's the content that gets you in the streaming service, but the way in which you want to hook somebody into subscribing versus just watching is a different message entirely, right? So you want to make sure that you're sort of getting them, you know, you're getting them hooked on that. And I think, again, that's where you can really use the information gathered from, and to Jason's point, all the channels, right? Like getting ratings from any one place doesn't really help you. It's really taking all those numbers, layering them together, figuring out the insights. What does that mean? What does that mean to me and to my campaign, and using that to drive your creative?
I find that so interesting because while you've seen, right, I think all the broadcast networks said we're not doing live overnight anymore. We're not reporting it out. But, you know, we still look so much at Nielsen data as media. So which it's like you're just not seeing all these layers of where content is resonating. So it's like it's a very interesting kind of challenging world to try to evaluate how things are actually doing. I want to digress for tiniest bit and ask you, Doug, what's been your own relationship with data since you've been doing this for a while? So you've been through this whole evolution. What was your own relationship with it? Were you at first apprehensive and then it changed as you saw what it could do for you? Or like what does that relationship look like?
I think, you know, I'm like every other creative, you know, you think your ideas are the best ideas ever. And of course they always are. I don't know that I was apprehensive so much as I was like, yeah, that makes sense, but I don't know how to implement that, right? I don't know what to take from that. And I think, and I can't even give you, like, it wasn't like, oh, a big aha moment. At some point, the insights got better, right? And that that India and her team, they don't just throw numbers at me, right? They crunch the numbers and they come back and say, this is the trends that we are seeing. People are responding to this. We have, you know, we were doing social for social content for a network, and we could see that the story arcs in their promos were going toward the wrong way from what we were seeing actively on social, right? We sort of fed that back to them and said, look, do with this what you want, right? But we're seeing this. And they changed that promo arc and it affected the on-air tune-in, right? So that is, to me, I was like, that's powerful. Like, why would I not, and still make great creative, why would I not take that under consideration? Why would I not have that one more bit in my toolkit, right?
The data gives you the ability to ensure that the creative that we're putting out into market is as relevant across every different touch point as possible. So it very quickly goes from just pushing one message out there to the masses to having the core creative idea that you're then thinking about in terms of different customer or subscriber segments. Mm-hmm. And in terms of that message, how do we tweak that to make it appropriate for Instagram, appropriate for Facebook, appropriate for the website on mobile, appropriate for the website on tablet, on desktop? We know what's relevant, right? What's the message we want to put into email? So it's the data that helps us really get to a point where we're thinking about that one-to-one versus versus the mass communication mindset. And that's what India and her team do better than anyone. And quite frankly, why people work with us is because we have the ability to harness that across the channels.
That's I'm going to turn this question on its head and go to India and say, so India, when you bring these, I was sort of laughing when Doug was talking about India doesn't just bring me numbers, because I'm like, yes, if India brought me numbers, I'd be like, thanks. I don't know what this says. So when you're working with creatives, what kinds of things do you do so that what you're bringing to them is actionable?
Yeah. So I'm a numbers person. Creatives often are not, right? So it's very, very important for our team to know how to tell a story to our creative teams, right? We are all day long telling stories to our clients, but my team just as much has to be able to translate that internally. Showing the value, explaining to them why it matters, painting more of a visual creative story around who the customer is, what they're interested in, what watch outs we have, things that you may not even be thinking of from a creative standpoint that we found, hey, this piece of creative isn't working and everything else is flourishing. So maybe we need to dive into this piece a little bit more. So it's definitely internal selling tactic. We're here to inform the creative team. We're definitely not here to constrain what they're doing. I always find it really interesting with data. I've seen it used as a tiebreaker in creative situations a lot of times, like in some of my past roles where we've got a couple of different iterations, you've got multiple stakeholders and everybody's got an opinion, right? Like Doug said, your idea is the best idea. Always, always, always. A-B testing is a great way for you to get around that and use the data and let the customer tell you what's important to them. And that's ultimately what we're always trying to do, is paint that customer picture and give that data insight in order to kind of help inform. And, you know, to Doug's point, we always want to be iterating on things. We don't want things to be static. And another really important benefit that I think our team brings is we come after the fact to measure. So in a digital world, you're always able to measure things, and we're able to really say, did this work or did it not work, versus just putting it out there and using maybe one metric to claim victory over a piece of creative. We're able to look at a bunch of different touch points on media, within email, digital websites, app engagement. I mean, the list goes on and on, honestly. There's a ton of data out there and a ton that you can measure.
I just want to say that as we were prepping for this call, India said something like, data isn't as, what did you say, India? It was like, data isn't as difficult or as confusing as people think, but I just want to say for the record that I still don't believe you, but okay.
I mean, people get really intimidated by data, I think. Mm-hmm. They get intimidated by numbers, but at the end of the day, it's really just trying to distill that information down into a story. I mean, we're all storytellers at the end of the day, no matter what our medium of choice is, whether it's writing, creating awesome websites, it doesn't matter. But yeah, data is very intimidating to a lot of people. I think that's where we find a lot of success with clients, is we're able to kind of augment onto their internal teams, mm-hmm. And add that extra layer of value. And I personally, you know, I've been at D6 a little over a year. I came from kind of what you would call client side. I have personally seen how slow things can be moving inside of an organization. And so we're able to come in and layer on our expertise to make things move faster, which is always a huge added client benefit.
So without giving away any secrets, when you're working with a client, are you essentially accessing data from what they've got? Meaning like you can see their Nielsen, or you can see their Google Analytics, or you can see their whatever their streaming numbers are. Is that how you get data that you can feed back to them, or do you have your own systems you work with, or both?
Yeah, so I would say it's a hybrid. Obviously, first party data, so what you're mentioning, their owned data is obviously what we are always after. That's what we primarily work with. We definitely are in a lot of client, you know, Google Analytics accounts. They're giving us access to kind of cloud data, or even like their systems and tools we definitely have access to. And then we have our own internal systems where we have processes put in place. We have dashboards that we have pre-built out. Making things scalable is obviously super important. So we want to have repeatable, scalable processes across clients. And that really is what allows us to be really efficient a lot of the times. So We definitely work with both. We'll tap into third-party data as needed. It's not something that we traditionally really try to focus in on, but it's, if there are pieces of information we kind of want to layer onto the first party, sometimes we will do that.
And then you probably also have social analytics too. So you're looking at whatever you can get from those platforms. So yep. When you're looking at all of that, is there sort of a, what's the Einstein theory, the theory of everything or whatever? Is there a data theory of everything? Or is it really like, this is how this did on Insta stories, and this is how it did on Facebook, and this is how the overnight, you know, they're all their own streams?
You definitely are looking at all of them in kind of their own individual lanes, I guess, if you will. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we are trying to build that full view ultimately. And there's not one single theory of everything that you're mentioning that applies to everybody or applies to every client. I will say a lot of the work we do is we try to be scalable and repeatable, but it is definitely very kind of bespoke depending on what a client's needs are, what they're asking for, what type of data they have. You know, not everybody's going to have the same quality of data. They're not necessarily going to give us the same access to everything. Data can live in lots of different places. And so then there's a whole process of tracking.
Yeah.
Things down. So there's definitely a lot that goes into it as we're kind of going through those processes.
Can you come up with an example that's maybe in the past less safe to use, where you were doing a campaign and you were going one direction and then the data came in and said, actually, you should be going in this direction, and you made a switch? Do you have any example of a time where that happened?
It was a situation where there was an on-air campaign that was really pushing for a couple of characters in a reality series. The series showrunners knew that those characters would be the ones that would be like have the best story arc and all that kind of stuff. Through social listening, through the data that was coming back from comments they were making, where people were bombing out within YouTube views, things like that, we learned very quickly that it's not that people hated those characters. That would have been fine. They didn't even care about those characters, right? And just didn't care. Like they were like nothing to them. That was a situation where, both from a promo standpoint, this is actually interesting, was from a promo standpoint, definitely changed the story arc of the episodic promos to deal with the characters that were actually we switched to a character that was hated because we thought the characters that were liked people would want, but they didn't even like them. But it was early enough in, not that the show hadn't been completely done, but they could go back and kind of re-architect the actual show. Story arcs were sort of where they wanted to go.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Because also, this could really send us down a separate rabbit hole, so we aren't going to go here. But it's interesting that the executive producers were like, this is, you know, these are the interesting people. And actually just shows you, when it comes to creative, you really don't know. So let's talk about if we were in fact launching a streaming service, what, you know, and you're going through the process of doing that, what does that look like in terms of the data that you're providing and the creative that you're providing and the journey that I'm going on? And I'm going to start with Jason on this one.
Yeah. So the launch of a platform, really it goes back to our earlier comments around how are you defining your audience and targeting your audience? And where we really come into play is taking a look at an organization's data that they currently have. A lot of the brands in the entertainment space that we work with have a lot of data that has gone underutilized, or they haven't had data scientists or data storytellers to come in and package up that data in a way that is, I guess to simplify it, that's usable, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a holistic look at what they have, pull out those key insights, and if it's insights that are focused on how we can increase the effectiveness and the efficiency of customer acquisition, we're going to do that. What do we know about the people that have been engaging with this content leading up to this point? We're going to package that up and give it to the brand, give it to the media agency to help them develop a buy and an overall strategy that's right to pull those folks in. We're also going to work with brands on what that acquisition funnel looks like and help them to identify where there are significant points of friction, where people are just opting out, help them to understand why or hypothesize why we think people are opting out of the acquisition funnel so that is as efficient as possible. And then once we've got those folks as a subscriber, then it's how do we communicate to these subscribers, to these viewers in the most personalized and relevant manner possible. And that's really where entertainment brands have the biggest advantage, because when you compare entertainment brands against just a consumer brand, entertainment brands have the one thing that a consumer brand is dying to have, and that's content.
Yeah.
Right? It's content that really is truly required to create that personalized experience. Every entertainment brand has that at their fingertips. So then it becomes a matter of how do I effectively create a marketing technology stack or fully optimize a marketing technology stack that I already have and fully leverage that to create those personalized, measured experiences that can be optimized over time. And then you get into the full life cycle marketing, right? You've got these sets of subscribers. Where did they come from, right? Which source were they acquired through? How are the different groups behaving? How do we identify those subscribers that are most likely to churn out? What are the strategies and tactics that we can employ to minimize those folks that are about to churn out? And then how do we increase the average revenue per user or per subscriber over time? So that's sort of a full look on how we engage with brands, both inside the entertainment space as well as outside.
Okay, I just have a suggestion. I think that you should change India's title to Data Storyteller. It's much better.
It's being considered.
Okay. Yeah, it's a much better title. I want to talk about this, a couple of things you mentioned there. One is the point probably before they subscribe when they opt out. And so what do you guys do there to try to change that journey, if you will? And then the same question around churn, which I think, you know, in the age of SVOD, which is really upon us, churn is the whole game. So what do you guys do at those points to try to change that trajectory?
You know, as Jason mentioned, identifying those friction points is super important. And it's really getting at the root of what is causing that. So you can identify where it's happening, but the why behind it is what really, really matters. And so being able to identify that why will really determine what the tactics are in order to kind of change what that path looks like. So for example, you know, you may have someone churning out because they're not going to use your service on a regular basis. And maybe you're not communicating with them in the right frequency. Maybe you're not communicating with them in the right channel. And so really identifying, you know, of this audience group or of this kind of persona that we've created, what do they prefer? What are they really influenced by? And kind of pivoting your marketing budget, your email strategy. So there are a lot of levers you can pull, right? There's tons of ways that you can re-engage with a customer, and it's really getting at the root of it that is super important. I would say at the end of the day, you're really just trying to meet your customer where they want to be met and how they want to be met and when they want to be met, right? And that's going to vary from person to person. And that's what, you know, we really try to focus in on from a data standpoint, is creating those segments and identifying what that looks like for different audiences, right? It may vary by age groups. It may vary by the social media that you prefer. It may vary by, I used to be a cable watcher and now I only have streaming services. And so really just trying to understand what that looks like is what we try to focus them on.
Is the answer or is the solve, do you find, almost always in the marketing, or is it ever in the offering? Meaning the customers are churning out or they're not subscribing and they're saying, you're not offering what I want. Is the answer ever, well, you need to provide them something different? or how, and if that's true, how do you deliver that information to the client?
I mean, I would say that it is almost always a combination of both, honestly. What we were originally speaking about is really that upper funnel and how you're communicating and how you're hitting the customer, but it's also a lot of times in the content, right? And, you know, I'll pass it over to Doug. That's content is his bread and butter, but a lot of times you can get as many people into the funnel as you want, but if their landing experience or just the experience overall is not what they're looking for, then they're going to exit the funnel, right? So I'll let Doug jump into the content piece a little bit.
I mean, if you're talking about a very specific streaming service, something like a Shudder, right, where we've got like one kind of content, you're not going to get people that don't like horror, right? That's not the case. But most of the streaming services now, and certainly all the ones that are coming in and all the different network groups are launching, right? They have a plethora of content, much like Netflix or much like an Amazon, right? And those streaming services that are a little more mature, they understand that it actually is rarely, in those cases, it's rarely the content, it's rarely the offering, it's the way in which you are communicating that offering to that person, right?
So surfacing it, right? Like, yeah, don't feed me a bunch of World War II documentaries. I don't care. Yeah. But maybe feed me a lot of Downton Abbey content. I'm just making this up. But
Exactly, right? Is that your Downton Abbey? I got that. That's exactly right. But but where it becomes really interesting is using data from other segments to inform the segment you're going after. So for example, if I'm a Doctor Who watcher and I know Jason watched Doctor Who and then Jason...
If you're a Doctor Who watcher.
If I am, certainly. Mm-hmm. How do I talk to this person and get them into the next thing? Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to just tell somebody the same thing over and over and over again. That's not what we mean by segmentation. What we mean by segmentation is learning about the connections, learning about the things that people have in common and finding those most points of commonality to be able to move them deeper and deeper into connections with the brand, to make an affinity connection there so that, as Jason said at the beginning, they become advocates for your own brand, right? Like they're the ones that are going out and telling all of their friends, I just watched this, you need to watch that, right?
Okay. I mean, India, how micro does that get? Meaning, like, would you actually know, I am a Downton Abbey fan, but I mostly draw that because I'm like, my husband and I share Netflix and there's a lot of World War II documentaries on there. Anyway, how micro does it get to that you know that this subscriber really wants this and then they maybe want that and then they want the other, you know? Are you really looking at it more from groups of psychographics?
Yeah. So, I mean, you obviously can get down to the micro level. For the data analysis that we're typically doing, it's more at the aggregate level. It's definitely a lot more high level and trying to create those groups in general. We're not going after individual people, targeting individual specific action by action behaviors that are happening. Or, you know, I know that you watched Downton Abbey for like 2 days straight and then a World War II documentary. Like that's not the level of granularity that we're ever trying to get at. And I know you mentioned psychographics. And so that's, you know, really a combination of the behavioral data, which is what we're talking about. And so those are those digital interactions, kind of the different touch points matched with using customer feedback. So survey data, focus groups, feedback that you get through a digital venue. And so kind of combining those together and really trying to get that full picture as well. But yeah, we're not, you know, individually targeting.
You're not in my house, is what you're saying.
Yeah, not in your house.
You can come to my house if you want, but yeah.
Okay. Well, you're on the other side of the country, so it might be.
Yeah, never in Denver. Okay, so let's talk budget, which is always touchy, but we're going to talk about it broadly. So how much more expensive is it for companies to do this kind of marketing, one? Or two, is it sort of, doesn't matter if it's expensive or not, you have to be in this game if you're in this business. And do you find that because of the increased conversion you get, that it's really paying for itself? Like, how do you address these budgetary questions with clients? And let me start with Jason on that.
Number one, you have to be doing this if you're in this mm-hmm. space. Number two, the efforts pay for themselves. As you're moving through these exercises and these initiatives, I can't speak for everyone in the space, but we are forecasting out the level of increased performance that we're expecting based upon our level of expertise and what we've done previously in terms of managing these types of programs. So we're always thinking about these efforts in terms of the business case. It's going to cost you X to get Y, right? Mm, and Y is exponentially greater than X. So, and that investment is looking at everything from an agency fee that encompasses everything that we do or could be doing for a client across creative and content, if we need to augment their internal teams to be able to create more content faster. That's what we do, augmenting, supporting, or standing alone with or without their internal analytics team, or working with and supporting their technology teams, right? So it's that business case includes costs associated with those areas and really any other area that we're touching, along with the, this is how it relates back to the generation of incremental revenue beyond what you're seeing today, or above and beyond the growth that you're seeing today. So our goal, we tend to think and look at the impact that we have on brands in terms of hundreds of percentage, right? So are we able to increase attributed revenue by 100%, 200%, 300%, because that's oftentimes what we have the ability to do for brands, both inside the entertainment industry as well as outside.
Yes, which will actually take me toward the actually my last question, but I wanted to follow up on something you just said there. Because you know, you've got more eyes on the data and more maybe experienced eyes on the data, and you're able to react more quickly, do you find that that creates efficiencies, or, you know, eliminates churn or eliminates opt out? So it makes the whole process more efficient ultimately. So then you're just keeping, because your marketing is so much better, so much more targeted, so much more accurate, you're able to sort of keep people in your ecosystem that much better.
Absolutely. That's essentially, Paige, what we're doing. We're helping organizations become much more efficient in how they go to market. But the reality is the efficiencies or money saving, cost savings, is a minimal part of what we're forecasting. We almost view it as a byproduct. It's absolutely part of our goal, but we want to show what we're going to be able to do from a growth perspective. That's really the big win for us. And that's what we love. Not that efficiencies aren't sexy and fun and exciting, but showing that,
so sexy.
You know, going to a brand and showing the chart up and to the right, like that's the chart that everybody likes to see.
What's blowing my mind a little, and it's not like this is my first rodeo on this topic, but if you think about just looking at linear networks and what marketing used to be compared to what this is and how much waste it was, it's just a little like, Why? I mean, we had no choice, right? That's what there was, but it's crazy to think about. The last thing I wanted to ask you about, this is obviously for an entertainment marketing audience, but I wanted you guys to talk a little bit about how this applies in the non-entertainment marketing space and how you compare the two. Like, what are some things that you do for non-entertainment marketing clients that you have found really apply back into entertainment marketing? Let me start with Doug.
So it's interesting. I was in exclusively entertainment marketing for 20 years, 15, 20 years. And then the last
10 years. And yesterday. No, just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last 10 years, I have obviously branched out and most of my work now is split between but entertainment and non-entertainment brands. I would have always said, well, though, you know, entertainment marketing is just a thing, right? Like it's a very special thing. And it is special because the product, as Jason pointed out, right? It's all content, right? It's a different kind of product. When you abstract it out to the sort of the marketing funnel, right? And how do we actually get someone to watch our show? How do we make them still watch our show? And how do we make them come back in season two, right? Those sort of touch points are the same regardless of what I'm marketing, right? So one thing I guess is I would say, what I've learned from non-entertainment brand marketing is that you need to still think about it as marketing, right? It still has the fundamentals of marketing still apply, right? And where it starts to, I don't know, diverge or maybe it's that it gets more specific is the way in which we talk about it and the way in the messages that we get to tell. And we're sort of fortunate in entertainment marketing, we get to tell those messages are really good, right? We get a lot, we already started the shows themselves are almost marketing in and of themselves, right? So we've already started with something that's good, right? We're not marketing some weird, you know, heavy blanket that nobody cares about, right? So we have that advantage. And I think what I feel like happens, at least has happened with me a lot, is I would get lost in the content and what that was and what that meant and not think about it from a marketing standpoint, right? And how mm-hmm. am I going to, right? I'll be like, this is just great content. Everyone's going to love this, right? And that's true a lot of the times, but we've seen that it's not true all the time, right? And so I think to me, the thing is, definitely take things from brand marketing, right? Take things, how does somebody market a CPG? How do you market a service, right? How do you do any of those things? All of those techniques apply here and should be applied here vigorously.
Yeah, because entertainment marketing is kind of like creative on creative. That's sort of the difference. Whereas, with brand marketing, it's more like, here's some stuff, now put some creative on top of it. For India, I would imagine that for you, it's probably all pretty similar, yes?
Yeah, I mean, what I will say is prior to coming to D6, I solely worked in non-entertainment web analytics. And from the work that I've done here, it's all a common framework. Essentially, what you're trying to get at the end of the day is all very similar. What's interesting about entertainment marketing is the pace of it can be very different. The content that is a part of it, that's something that other brands really struggle with. And from an entertainment standpoint, you've got so many iterations and content at your fingertips. Whereas with other brands, that is something, you know, we may come upon a situation where we're suggesting, hey, we need to change this content. It's not working. And then it's this long process to make those updates. Mm-hmm. Those are some interesting points as well. And one thing that I will say specifically for the streaming is there's a lot of great data that streamers have on their hands, right? You have to be logged in, you're subscribed to it. There's so much information that you can know about a consumer that other brands would kill to have that data. You're not necessarily going to get that for websites where a user just comes onto the website, they're not having to log in, you don't know anything about them. You can see the activities that they're doing, but with some of the deeper levels of data that you get with some of the entertainment marketing, you can really start to draw out some more just like deeper levels of insights that give you that fuller picture. So it's exciting. It's also really fun. Honestly, it's a lot more of a fun analytics environment to be in. So
yes, that's true. Data storyteller. Jason, what are your final insights? And then also here, if you want to say anything else that I didn't give you a chance to say, now's the time.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it just goes back to the advantage that people in the brands in the entertainment industry have, which is content. And then the challenge is how do you get to a point where you can do everything possible with the content?
Yeah, how do you maximize the value of that content?
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have had the conversations where we're making a recommendation to an entertainment brand that they need, you know, a couple hundred versions of this. And the look on their face is, you know, how are we going to do that? We obviously can help. We work with organizations to be more efficient at producing content at scale. That's the name of the game, both for entertainment brands as well as for non-entertainment brands. The difference is the advantage, right? Within entertainment, that content is the product. We love that area. And then again, the kind of the last thing that's on my mind is, Paige, I think where we started, it's the most organizations have the tools, they have the technology, they have the data, they have the content. It's just a matter of what really needs to happen to make the most of those three things. Yeah. And being able to communicate to senior leadership or the executive team, hey, we need to make these investments, but when we make these investments, this is what we're going to get in return. And this is how long it's going to take. And that's the difference between people that are going to be successful and those that are going to lag in the space.
Well, not to put too fine a point on it, but almost what you're saying is you could not do this, but then you're leaving money on the table, really.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what we say. When we're working with a brand, we're looking for the money. We're looking to generate more revenue for them because, quite frankly, we want brands to look at Definition 6 as the best investment that they're making. And it doesn't matter if it's across content and production and wonderful, beautiful creative at scale, or technology and analytics. We just want to be viewed as an amazing partner and a really great investment for them.
All right, you guys, that was awesome. Thank you all so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. It was great chatting with you.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you have suggestions for conversations, please reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn at Promax Global, or on Instagram and Twitter at Promax_Global. You can also email us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate and review us, or on Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, thanks for listening.